Welcome back to the Blue Jays Plus Podcast. My name is Ewan Ross from Prince George, British Columbia, and you are?
Gideon Turk in Toronto, Ontario.
So, this week, we will be looking at the Blue Jays' defensive problems, their bullpen usage in general. We will be covering our minor league player of the week, Colby Rasmus and his swing and how good he's looked, lineup construction, and John Farrell's return to town, and possibly some other things if time permits. But we'll dive right in. Our first topic of the week is the Blue Jays' overall defensive acumen. This started in the first game of the year when J.P. Arencibia was called upon to catch R.A. Dickey, and it went about as predictably as you would expect. He had three pass balls, he allowed a wild pitch, and I think he allowed a stolen base as well. Gideon, what are your thoughts on this?
He was really bad. To put it blunt, that drug Jays fans post with like the 9 or 10 gifs of him just dropping the balls. He had three pass balls, but he was dropping everything. It was sad. If you're putting Henry Blanco on the team, his only use is to catch R.A. Dickey. Have him catch R.A. Dickey.
I could not agree more. I would say that the only reason JP was starting that game is because they wanted him in the lineup on opening day, which is an incredibly silly reason to start him, but I'm hoping that was the reason. Is that your opinion on that as well? Because, yeesh.
Yeah, I guess that's the reason, but I don't know. Just start Dickey on the second day, then have Morrow or Johnson start the first, like... You have capable starters to start your first game. If that's the reason, you just gave away a game because you want JP and CB to start. That's stupid.
Absolutely. And that was not the only defensive issue that we had. We had Friday night, especially when Emilio Bonifacio had potentially the worst game in Major League Baseball history, allowing three errors defensively and striking out 4 times.
Yeah, I just watched those errors. Those were pretty bad, like right to him. The throw was... How could he miss that throw? It was like 10 feet away, the first error. It's kind of sad. I mean, he's not used to second base, I guess, but he's played it enough that he should be able to make a straightaway throw to first base.
No doubt. I mean, none of those plays were spectacular. I would also say that he missed a couple of plays that he could have made in the field that weren't all errors, but with a plus defender out there, I think the plays could have been made as well. And I think that this gets back to an overall problem that Blue Jays fans haven't really realized yet, and that's just how bad the team is going to be defensively overall. We were so used to seeing last year with Brian Butterfield and his shifts and Brett Laurie at third base, although hopefully when he returns that should be an issue anymore, and Yunel Escobar for, you know, being an upgrade at shortstop. I really think that the Jays could have a very below average defense this year, and I don't think Blue Jays fans have realized that yet.
Yeah, I wrote an article about that back in December comparing last year's defense, which was one of the best in the league, to the projected one this year. And it's bad. I mean, last year we were spoiled with Laurie, Escobar, Johnson wasn't bad, Mathis was good, Rasmus was good.
With Johnson being good, but other than that, you're completely right.
Projected this year, the only person who should have a positive DRS is going to be Brett Laurie.
Absolutely. And we really badly need him to get back in the lineup because I think if you had Asturias playing second base, because he has not looked good, he made an error in, I believe, the second game of the year at third base. And he's not a natural third baseman. He can fake it at shortstop and third base, but he's a second baseman by trade. So once Laurie gets back and you can play Asturias regularly at second, spot Bonifacio in the outfield where he can be hidden, I think there may be some improvement.
Yeah, I was at that second game. Sturrs, he had the errors. It wasn't really fair to charge him with the error, though. I mean, both of those plays, one went off his glove, I think, and one was just out of his reach. They're hard to get. One was, like, behind his shoulder, and one was to the side. I wouldn't, like... His defense wasn't bad. We're spoiled with Brett Laurie, so we assumed they'd get... I don't know if Brett Laurie would have made those plays either. So I haven't thought of Sturrs has been that bad, but as you said, he is international third baseman, so there will, in the next two or three weeks... until Laurie comes back, there will be some problems over there.
100%. It's not even just the errors with me. It's plays that aren't made that a good defender would turn into outs.
And yeah, 100%.
People...
I think it was maybe the first game that there was a ball hit to Sturrs to his left, and he jumped up, but he just mistimed it. And it went. It hit off his glove and went into the outfield. You can't do that.
You got to come down with those.
Yeah.
And the outfield is another issue where people haven't fully realized that our outfield defense, as long as no matter who you put out there, is not going to be a plus. Rasmus is not a good defensive center fielder. He plays far too shallow for my liking, and his range is not especially good to begin with.
And the mainstream media makes it as he's such a good defender. Oh no, Mike Wilner loves him, and I don't know, everybody thinks he's so good because of Wilner.
Yes, well, let's not get into Mike Wilner for now.
We'd be here all night.
Exactly. So transitioning from that, one of the more disappointing aspects of the first week, to an area that I've been quite impressed with, is the Jays bullpen, which. Had some changes in it today with Jeremy Jeffress being sent down. Why don't we start with that? Jeffress yesterday was thrown out there, and while his control was not as bad as I kind of expected it to be, he was by far the worst reliever that we've seen this year. And he was promptly designated for assignment, and very surprisingly in my books, Dave Bush was called up. Were you as surprised by that as I was?
Yeah, I think Lincoln would get the call.
Well, I thought Fielder would get the call to get rid of the eight-man bullpen.
Yeah, if you're going that route. But if you're going with another reliever, I'm surprised it wasn't Lincoln.
Yeah.
I don't really see a reason why not. We'll talk about Lincoln more later, though.
Exactly. So with Jeffress being sent away, you're now left with guys. So let's go over to Darren Oliver, who... last year, for all his flaws as a manager, John Farrell did a very good job of spotting his usage. He was very rarely used on back-to-back days, and three games into the season, he was used on back-to-back days against the Indians, and he was very poor in that second consecutive outing. I was very surprised to see this, because while Aaron Loop had already been used in that game, Brett Cecil had not. He'd had the day before off. So I expected that Brett Cecil would be the guy to turn to if he needed a left-hander. But he went to Oliver, and the results were about as you would have expected.
Yeah, what is he, 42 now? 41?
44.
He's 42. He can't be pitching back-to-back days, and this is where I disagree with you. I think we're going to get into this, that I have not liked Gibby's bullpen management yet. I definitely agree, though, with Cecil was there and he looked amazing in his first performance. Why not go to him if you're going to use the lefty? There's no reason not to.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're wasting Oliver's arm for Friday night, especially when you're warming up Jansen, so he's gone for the night, so he won't be ready for Friday. And Delabar was used, and then he's not ready for Friday, so you're wasting three of your four best pitchers not available for Friday.
That is the only point where I've quibbled with John Gibbons' bullpen usage. Other than that, I've been very impressed with him. He's shown most of the time, most managers around the league will be very reluctant to use the left-handers in their bullpen against righties. He hasn't done that because the lefties that we do have are not strict loogies. with the possible exception of Aaron Loop, who today did look very decent against the few righties that he did have to face. But I've liked that he's gone to Oliver against righties. I've liked that he's used Cecil since he was a former starter against the lefties, or against righties, sorry. And I've also liked that he's gone to see Delabar when he's needed to. I've been overall fairly impressed with what he's done with the bullpen.
Yeah, I've liked his in-game tactics. I just don't think he's been thinking ahead, because you can't use your three pitchers on back-to-back, your three out of your four best pitchers on back-to-back days. So then on Friday night you're stuck with Jeremy Jeffries, Santos, Loop, and Cecil. Yeah. Oh, not Loop.
Yeah, it was Rogers. But overall, I've been very happy with John Gibbons. But I guess that is a point to look at. And after seeing how badly John Farrell handled the bullpen last year, I guess anything is sort of an upgrade in my mind. So I'm sort of not really, I'm a little spoiled by the fact that he's not John Farrell.
Yeah, I'm not going to complain, because John Farrell was horrible.
Yes.
And Gibby, no matter what he does, will be better than John Farrell.
Yeah, so let's just talk about Brett Cecil for a little bit, because I have to admit, he, over the past few years, has been one of my least favorite Blue Jays. I have not liked almost anything that I've seen out of him as a starter, but through two appearances this year, he's looked spectacular. His velocity is up to touching 94. His curveball has been located very, very well and quite effectively. And I think he could be quite an effective weapon out of that pen if he's spotted correctly and potentially used for multiple outs as hopefully a super reliever, but let's not get our hopes up.
Yeah, he's looked great. He touched 95 today, 95.13 according to BrooksBaseball.net with his fastball. His sinker has been averaging 94 in his two appearances. I think that's his best pitch. And then his slider and curveball have a lot more movement than they did the past few years, so that's nice to see. And it looks like that Delabar program worked, because that velocity is up. Higher than it was when he was a starter, I believe.
Well, that's to be expected. Being used out of the bullpen, you usually see a tick up in velocity.
As in, like, before.
Yes,
before,
yes.
His velocity diminished. It was sitting 93, and now it's at 95, so that's good to see.
Sure.
I wonder what it was in college when he was a closer. Fortunately, those numbers are not available.
No. Transitioning. One other thing that I was thinking about is Sergio Santos, because when we got Sergio Santos last year, it was assumed that he would be the closer, and if he hadn't blown out his arm last year, he was on track to be the closer. And in my mind, Casey Jansen, for all of the success that he's had the past couple of years, is just not the kind of guy I like to see closing out games. He doesn't really strike enough guys out. He's more of a control and feel kind of guy. And while that's very useful out of the bullpen, I'd like to see a guy with a bit more swing and miss stuff to be used there.
Yeah, I agree. I just, right now, I wouldn't go Santos. I think you want to get him into a role. He looked good today, but get him into a role, get him a few games that he's K-ing guys, and then you want to move Jansen out. But until Jansen proves that he can't do it, I think you have to stay with him because of how long he's been with the club, and you have to be loyal to him.
Yeah. Back to the newly promoted Dave Busch, who... I'm completely stunned by this. I'm just curious what role you see Busch having on this roster. Because as the eighth man, I guess he's on there in case there are blow-ups by the starters. But other than that, I don't really see much of a use for him.
Yeah, I'm kind of a loss as why he's up here also. Jeffries was competing for that last spot, so it wasn't like he was just the long man. Now, Dave Busch, it's essentially what he is. There's really no reason for him to be up here.
Yeah, even when he was a starter, I always viewed him more as an innings eater type of guy, with not the kind of guy that I would expect to transition well to the bullpen. And after seeing a lot of people clamoring for the eight-man bullpen to go away, I wrote a piece late last week about Casper Wells of the Seattle Mariners being waived. And I really thought the Blue Jays should have picked him up. He's a guy that I find is a very underrated player and who the Mariners decided to sign a bunch of guys who I frankly think are worse than him, like Raul Ibanez or, oh my God,
Jason Bay.
So he was on waivers. He cleared waivers entirely. So not only did the Jays not claim him, but desperate teams like Twins or the Royals looking for an upgrade over Jeff Francoeur let him go.
The Mets even. They could use any outfielders.
This guy gets very little respect around the league. He does a lot of things well. He's not an especially great center fielder, but if you put him in the corner, he's a plus defensive outfielder. And he's got power, especially against lefties, with a slugging percentage over 450 for his career. So nothing we can really do about that because he's down to the minor leagues. So, you know, just a guy to look out for because I think we, at least until Lori gets back, we need that 12th man. We need more flexibility on the roster.
Yeah, I don't know why they did bring up McCoy.
Yeah, he serves a role as an emergency guy. I don't have much faith in Mike McCoy to do much of anything, but you know, if you need that 12th man on the roster, you can fill in everywhere. I guess he can do the job.
Why did they bring up Tate Bush? I'm just so upset. The whole point of the eight-man bullpen was for Jeffries and Cecil to compete, and now the competition's over. Why are you for having an eight-man bullpen?
One inning from Jeffries convinced them otherwise. So, what can you say? So that'll transition us over to our minor league player of the week. Previously, this was the prospect of the week, but we figured that we would run out of prospects since the Blue Jays system is not exactly teeming with them after all of the offseason trades. So this week we're going to cover Brad Lincoln, who was acquired in a midseason trade from the Pirates for Travis Snyder. As the former top five pick, but he struggled for years as a starter. But last year, after transitioning to the bullpen in Pittsburgh, he was very good, serving as one of their primary setup men to Joel Hanrahan and Jason Grilley. But this year, they made some noises about him becoming a starter in spring training, and then all of a sudden, he's not a starter anymore, but he's in AAA, presumably because Jeffries had options. But that doesn't make any sense now that Jeffries is gone and Dave Bush is up. So, any thoughts on Lincoln, the player, and just sort of how he's being treated thus far this year?
I'm kind of upset how they started him off as a starter in camp, right away decide to switch him to a reliever, and then just passed on him for the eighth man. Maybe that shows that they're not really into the whole eight man thing, and if they're going to bring Lincoln up, they want him to stay up for a long time.
That does make sense. Is a plausible explanation at the very least.
Yeah, I don't think you want him to be Mike McCoy and just traveling back and forth between Buffalo and Toronto, though it's not really like Las Vegas and Toronto, so it's not a big deal. But there's nothing really to say. I mean,
yeah, he was not especially good when he came up. After the trade, his ERA spiked.
Yeah, he didn't impress last year.
No, but I still think that is a small enough sample size that I'm willing to cut him some slack. And
his home runs were a problem last year. His strikeouts were good. Walks were good. Like, it was 28 innings. I'd rather have Brad Lincoln than Dave Bush.
It was. He's now appeared in one game for who Fangraphs is still calling the Mets AAA team in Buffalo. And he walked a guy. His FIP is 17.2 in the smallest of small sample sizes. But I suppose we're just going to let him go down to AAA, and if guys get hurt, he'll be one of the first relievers on the way up. But I would have thought that would have happened today instead of Bush, but what can you do?
Yeah, I think the explanation would be that they want him to get time, and they don't want him to be the eighth guy in the bullpen who might not be used so much. I think it's the same case with Josh Tully, that you want him to get at-bats, so you want Lincoln to get innings.
I think the Tully situation has a little more to do with defense, because Tully's defense is not very good.
It's true.
And so if you're going to carry Blanco to catch Dickey, which let's hope he does from now on, I think you want Tully down there in case JP falls apart or who knows.
Yeah, let's hope this 8-man pen goes away soon.
Do we have any ideas what's going on with Brett Laurie? Because I haven't really heard any updates about him at all.
I think Jamie Campbell tweeted today that it sounds like he's a ways away.
Oh, God. Really?
I'm not sure what that means as time-wise, but last we heard, officially, it was 2 weeks. So how long can a ways away be?
Yeah, I'm seeing sort of 2 more weeks, and that was on April 2nd. So, yeesh. That's going to compound the issues with both the 8-man pen and the defense, but ride it out, because nothing we can do about it.
Bring up Luis Jimenez for the 13th man.
No thanks. I'll pass. So, transitioning over to two players who I've had major question marks about throughout last season and spring training, one of them being Colby Rasmus, who you wanted to talk about how great his swing has been looking, and the other one being JP Arencibia, who's swinging and missing a lot and not looking great defensively, but when he makes contact, they are going very, very far. So talk about Rasmus for a little bit.
Yeah, I watched his home run today, which is unbelievable. And then I think it was Thursday that he hit that home run. Yeah, he fouled the ball off into like 400 level, and like I think 2 pitches later he hit that home run. But that ball left up, he just crushes it. It doesn't even look like he's trying. He makes contact. His swing is so easy and free. It's just fluid motion. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I think that might be the hardest ball I've ever seen hit at Rogers Center. The only one that really contends was the fourth deck shot by Jose Canseco during Jose Canseco at his Jose Canseco-iest. But this one was a complete rocket. I'm not even sure if it started going down when it hit the facing of the third deck. But he's still swinging and missing an awful lot. But when he's made contact, all he's done is hit extra base hits. It does not have a single on the year. Has numerous strikeouts, but he does have those 2 home runs. And a double. He keeps doing this. I'm going to get off the Anthony Gosha come up train, at least for a little while, until our defense gets so bad that I can't take it anymore, and ride it out, especially with the hair flowing behind his back, looking like a cape coming up behind him, which is really fun to watch.
It's a problem how nice his swing is and how much potential he shows, because he goes through these slumps where he just can't hit anything. But you can't give up on him because he has that potential to be like he was in 2010. He was a 4-WAR player. And just his home runs are just so amazing to watch.
Yes. On to JP, because he is currently slugging .867, which is ridiculous. The strikeout rate of 30%, it's not something you want to see. I mean, both these guys both have strikeout rates above 30%.
Cool. JP Arencibia's strikeout rate last year was 29%, so not much of a change this year.
No, and if he's going to hit .333 with an .800 slugging percentage, I will gladly take that.
That is true.
Managed to be worth a full run negatively in the field already through 4 games, which, yikes. And defensive metrics being what they are. But, you know, those are two guys that I'm going to have my eye on, especially throughout the year. Because they're big time keys for this team going forward.
Yeah, if Aaron Sebia can just get on base at like a 320 mark even and hit 25 home runs, that's one of the best catchers in the league right there. He's a one-tool player, unless you count his looks, of course, because JP and Sebia. But if he can add to that, he could be special.
Absolutely. And so we're wrapping up our first week of the season look back. We have the Red Sox who came into town on Friday night, and there was John Farrell returning to town. And he got greeted. I actually thought the boos would be decidedly worse than he got. There was a lot of booing, but I didn't think that it was nearly as bad. What were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I thought it would be worse. I listened to some of it. It wasn't that bad. It was just more like fair or not what everybody else expected.
The fans booing him when he came out onto the field to check on Jose Iglesias' injury was probably at least the most notable section of it, because it does look like they're booing a guy getting hurt, which you don't want to see.
Well, but they are Toronto sports fans, so you never know.
They are. Toronto sports fans are as good at booing as almost anybody. Ask Mike Komisarek or Ricky Romero, for that matter.
Although, I think if a Yankee got injured, I would have to cheer, so I can't put myself above everybody else.
I got to admit, I was not that disappointed when I saw John Lackey grabbing his forearm today, because, not only is he a Red Sox, but he's also not a very good human being from some of the things you've read about his marital status. But, let's try and ignore that part, because I'm going to be a good human being here. But I want to sort of get to an article written by CBS's Danny Knobler, which is the second article in this short season that I've had an issue with him. I wrote up a piece, his easy article about the Astros in the preseason. And then Friday night, he wrote about how it was a strange article because, first of all, he criticized the Toronto fans for booing Farrell, saying that he didn't think he'd seen anything like that before. I think he was talking about with the manager, but I couldn't really tell.
Yeah. It was a bad article.
It was bad. It's not even just the premise was bad. Some of the writing in it wasn't especially good, and it's lazy.
It was Canadian racism or bias. Everybody seems to hate on Canada. The national American media.
I'm used to them just ignoring us, which I can kind of deal with, but
that we're in the spotlight, they just can't deal with it.
Yeah, it was an article that basically dismissed the Blue Jays 4 games into the year because they hadn't gotten any wins yet. And yet the Red Sox in those 4 games, after playing the Yankees, everything was great. Bobby Valentine's not around anymore. John Farrell's the best. Look how great they are. Jackie Bradley, oh my God. And it was just really, really poor. And you had a piece of audio here that was rather interesting, given that he seemed to be bagging on the Jays fans for booing Farrell and implying that Rogers had been running a promotion to let's boo our ex-manager, which I hadn't seen anything from Rogers advocating that at all.
Rogers has not done that. Nobody in the media has advocated it. And where that came from is ridiculous.
Yeah, and so we're going
to
have...
I am the first to criticize Rogers on lots of things, but they would not advocate the booing of somebody.
You don't need to. When a guy disrespects your town and disrespects your team, the fans know what to do. They're going to boo whether they're told to or not. But so we have one article that we're going to link to at the bottom, which is images of outside Fenway Park when Johnny Damon returned to Boston after signing with the Yankees.
Yeah,
where
courtesy of Emily from Bluebird Banter. I'm not sure what her Twitter handle is. Hold on. At EmilyG819. Tweeted this. It was pictures of people booing and signs and stuff from when Johnny Damon returned. The first picture is of a sign that says, "Who needs Damon?" which every fan at Fenway Park received on their entrance to Fenway Park, sponsored by WEEI Radio. So, Danny Nobler, the Jays don't advocate booing, but the Red Sox do.
Exactly. And then we're just going to play a quick clip of Johnny Damon's first at-bat in Fenway Park. And so let's go to that now. As you can hear, that was a worse reception than I've ever heard, than I heard from Farrell last night.
Easily.
And yeah, that is sponsored booing. That is the sports radio station in town advocating it and printing up signs for the fans. Toronto fans are creative enough. They'll throw waffles at their teammates if they don't like them. So, you know, screw you, Danny Nobler. Keep writing bad articles, because I'm really enjoying writing these takedown pieces on them, because they're very, very easy to do. Yeah.
Farrell was, in his press conference, he called out Wilner for supposedly telling the fans to boo, which is kind of ironic, because Wilner was the only one who actually stuck up for Farrell all those months that he was just being horrible. Wilner was sucking up to Rogers and saying that Farrell was the best. So it's nice for John Farrell to just stab him in the back right there.
Yes, I mean, Mike Wilner is, we all kind of know that he's a company man, and that's what he does. So, you know, just completely mistargeted, both by Farrell being indignant about his reaction, Nobler writing terrible. So, in addition to the trolling that we saw from Danny Nobler on Friday night, it looks like NESN, or the New England Sports Network, is getting in on this by hashtagging every tweet they've had for the entire day with Crush Canada, because not only were the Red Sox in Toronto tonight, but the Bruins were also in Montreal, and of course, Boston managed to lose both these games.
It's not the NESN account, it's the at NESN Nation account, so it's not the official one. This one only has 6,000 followers.
Oh, really? I didn't notice that. Yeah, this is, I suppose, their
trolling account.
It's the trolling account, essentially. With such things as, "Good night, Canada, we may have lost these games, but in the morning we will play more games and you will still be Canada." With more stuff here, like, God, just a bunch of garbage. You know, trolling us about the War of 1812, which we won. And just a bunch of garbage. I'm quite familiar with this because when my Vancouver Canucks played the Bruins in the finals, we got tons of this, not only from NESN, but also from Jack Edwards, their atrocious Boston Bruins play-by-play man. So, yeah, what are your thoughts on this before I get to mine? Because I think I got some different ones.
It's what it is. They're assholes for a reason.
Yeah, they're trying to stoke up their own fan base, which I kind of understand. But I'm actually fairly happy to see this, because unlike the past, where Toronto was a blip on everyone's radar, including the Red Sox, and, you know, previously, they would have just been trolling the Canadiens fans, meaning Montreal, and just ignoring the fact that the Red Sox were in Toronto today. But, you know, they clearly care. They know that we're the favorite in this division. And it's nice to see that, you know, they want to stoke up their fans by getting Toronto-centric. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it's like how everybody hates the Yankees before this year, because everybody's so jealous of the Yankees.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, they're tweeting things out about, you know, Toronto booing, Farrell going out to the mound to check on Lackey, which anyone who doesn't understand that, they're not booing Lackey in any way.
Yes, the only people who boo John Lackey are Red Sox fans.
Very good point. And his wife. Yeah, I'm assuming his wife boos him all the time as well.
This is true. Brett Myers cheers him on.
Oh, God. Don't. Yeah, it's just been, you know, wife abuse week up here in Toronto with Myers and now Lackey. Not that I want to put Lackey in the Brett Myers category, because having a contentious divorce is different than slapping the hell out of her. So, yeah, it's just interesting. It's such a change of pace for Blue Jays fans to actually be on these teams' radars.
I like it.
So do I. I mean, I'm hoping that, you know, at least we beat them today so that this stupid Crush Canada hashtag hopefully goes away.
Yeah, we better win tomorrow or today when or yesterday.
Whenever
you're listening to this.
Strange podcast timing. But, yeah, so, you know, screw you, Boston. Yeah, don't like you. Going over to our final section, there's something that sort of jumped out to me this week was Esmo Rogers running on the field wearing number 32, which, of course, is Roy Halladay's old number. And I guess I hadn't noticed this last year, but evidently Aaron Laffey also wore 32 last year. And this really surprised me because, you know, as a Vancouver Canucks fan, when Mark Snelling retired, the number 19 was not worn again because they knew that his number was going to be retired. And so it just seems to make a lot more sense to, you know, leave it be, leave the number 32. There are lots of other numbers available, knowing that Halliday's number is going to be retired. And then I went back and looked, and the number of players who have worn Roberto Alomar's number 12 before he was retired was very long, and it was a bunch of very poor players for the most part.
Aside from Edwin Encarnacion.
Sure. But, you know, you've got, like, Luis Lopez and Tony Phillips, who's great, but was way past his prime at that point. You know, Billy Green and Rich Butler. It's just, you know, it seems to make sense that you leave those numbers blank.
Well, I mean, they didn't really have a policy of retiring numbers until Alomar got into the Hall of Fame, what was it, 2 years ago now? 3 years ago? So I don't. The Halliday is understandable because he's a sure Hall of Famer in my mind. I think Delgado, who wore 25 and that has since been worn by Troy Glaus, David Percy, and Chris Woodward. I don't know, you're not retiring his number. He is going on the level of excellence this year. So I don't think it's wrong to wear his number. Tony Fernandez wore which number?
I'm not exactly sure.
Look that up.
Number one. Which is awesome.
Which has been worn.
Mickey Morandini, Joe Englet, Ray Olmedo. I was actually very surprised to find out that Blues have not retired any numbers. Because I guess they do. They put them on the Ring of Honor or whatever the hell they call it. But I guess it takes getting into the Hall of Fame to have the number retired.
Yeah, that's what they've said is going to be the level. So then, are you not? You're waiting for Halliday to be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, Aaron Laffey and Esmo Rogers can wear a different number. for the greatest pitcher in the game for, what, 8-9 years?
Yeah, I mean, he's, despite his, you know, falling off a cliff the last year and a half, kind of, he's still at least in the discussion for being the best pitcher of his era. And, you know, Esmo Rogers doesn't have the kind of career where he's going to be offended by having to wear a different number. It just struck me as weird.
Yeah, I remember when Laffy wore it last year, people were kind of up in arms. I'm not sure if he changed numbers.
Rogers or Laffy?
Laffy. He did not. And Laffy, it's not like he wore 32 twice before. Oh, I guess for 4 years he wore it with Indians, so that's understandable. And he wore it with the Mariners. But
same thing with Rogers. I mean, Rogers wore 32 with Cleveland, but he was 48 with the Rockies for 2 years. So it's not like he's tied to the number 32. It struck me as a very strange thing to do. And yeah. So a segment that we're going to do weekly is looking ahead to the upcoming games next week, when hopefully you will be listening to this. So next week, the Jays head out on their first road trip with the first stop in Boston.
In Detroit,
against the very intimidating Detroit Tigers. In the first game on Tuesday, since they have Monday off, we will see Brandon Morrow facing Anibal Sanchez, which is quite a pitching matchup. Then there's the soft tosser edition of that series with Mark Burley against Rick Porcello. And then Josh Johnson against Doug Fister to close out the series. So
We get so lucky to miss both Verlander and Scherzer?
Well, frankly, the Tigers intentionally set up their rotation so that Scherzer would be in the number five role because they didn't want to waste him against the Twins. They wanted to pitch him against the Yankees. But, heck,
Twins get no respect. It's hilarious.
The Twins shouldn't get respect. They're going to be really bad this year. Especially with Aaron Hicks off to the start that he has, killing my fantasy team. So, which of those three games are you looking forward to the most?
I probably won't even be able to watch any of them, but... Thursday. Maybe? Monday? Or Tuesday? Tuesday.
I would say that's actually...
So indecisive, I can't decide between Johnson and Morrow.
I'm going the other way. I'm taking the Mark Burley start. For one thing, I want to see Rick Porcello on the mound because... He's a pitcher that really interests me because I think his upside is being hidden in front of that Detroit defense because he's a strict contact guy with heavy ground ball tendencies, and hitting into an infield of Cabrera, Peralta, and Fielder, he's not doing him any favors.
What I can't wait to see is Emilio Bonifacio bunting off of Rick Porcello to Miguel Cabrera.
That's a very good point. We might want to see, regardless of whether Bautista is back next week, which we're hoping that he is, you might want to see Rajay Davis in the lineup there just to get as much speed as possible, given the lack of mobility on the corners from both Fielder and Cabrera.
Which probably won't happen because they're all righties. But Rasmus is going to need a day off eventually, and Melky will also, so...
He does have Monday off, though.
Oh, they have Monday off. That's a problem.
So after that, they will be heading into Kansas City. And in Kansas City, we can expect to see the first game will be Jay Happ versus Luis Mendoza, followed by James Shield against R.A. Dickey, and then what I'm guessing will be Ervin Santana against... Brandon Morrow.
Dingers.
Yeah. Santana looked as bad as you can in his first start of the year against the White Sox, giving up 4 home runs, I think. He was dreadful. And he was that bad last year. So.
But he's going to bring them to the playoffs, so it's okay.
I feel so bad for the Royals fans. of all the American League teams, they're probably my second favorite team because I follow a lot of writers from the Kansas City area because they have an excellent group of writers. And I just want to see some happiness in Kansas City for once. Not next week, because I want to kick the crap out of them. But overall, just, you know, I hope things go well in Kansas City and they don't fail like I sort of expect they will.
They'll fail.
It's quite likely.
Irvin says Hanna's their number two starter.
One thing is, we do miss Jeremy Guthrie, and Jeremy Guthrie looked great in his start, so...
Yeah, that's good.
It's possible.
Davis didn't look bad, I don't think.
No. Even Bruce Jen didn't look bad. But, yeah, so that's what we have coming up next week. And, anything else for us this week before we say goodbye, Gideon?
I do not think so.
No, that's it for me. And, go Jays, go.
Housekeeping.
Oh, housekeeping, yes. So, housekeeping, you can follow me on Twitter at Mentoch, M-E-N-T-O-C-H. You can go and read the articles that I wrote in the last couple days. One of them about the Danny Nobler piece that I will link to in the description box. And one on Casper Wells, which is now irrelevant. And what about you?
You can follow me on Twitter at Gideon Turk, G-I-D-E-O-N-T-U-R-K. Or at Blue Jays Plus for the site account. Like us on Facebook. Search up Blue Jays Plus. And what to expect this week on the site? I'm not sure. We'll have to see what happens.
And we'll probably have our first look at the minor leagues, see how the youngsters in the system will be doing. But other than that, it sort of depends on how the Jays do.
Let's hope they go 7-0.
6-0.
6-0. Stupid day offs.
So, for next week, we will talk to you then, and go Jays, go!